Good afternoon. Are you able to hear me? Hold on a second. Let me see if I've got... Everyone should be able to be heard. As long as you can hear me, it's okay.
Roger.
Thank you. Please join me for saying the Anabakoch. Anabakoch Gedulat Shemimcha Tatir Tzerura Alephet Gimel Yutat Tzadi Kabel Rinat Amcha Sagbeinu Taharenu Nora Kufre Shayan Sintet Nun Nagibor Dorshe Yehudcha Givavat Shamrem Nun Gimel Dalet Yudkavshim. Barchem tacharem rakamei sitkatcha tamid gamlem betetresh tzaditav gimel. Chasin kadosh birov tuvcha nael adatach. Tet kuf bet, tet nun ayin. Yachid ge'e lamcha p'nei zokre kedushatach. Yud gimel lamed pei zayin kuf. Shavateinu kabel ushmar tziakateinu yodea talumot shen kufav. Tzadiyut Taf, Taf that created the planet Lavana, the moon, and the Chet that created the constellation Sartan, which is Cancer, or the crab. And it also created the Hebrew month of Tammuz. And the eighth verse we say in a whisper, as I have indicated previously, there is no Zohar for the Parsha of the Maaseh, and also next week for Devarim. And this is all connected to the energy of the three-week period, which we need to veil our direct connection to the Creator, because there's too much energy for the vessels. And since the Zohar is that inner essence, a higher level of energy, we're veiling it by not having a connection to it. So we've been studying from the secrets of the third temple, and we'll continue to do so. Right now we're in the key concepts essay or section, and I believe we're at sources of Shefa Sephiroth and parts of Fim. Let me just double check. Yes. we're actually at a section called Roots and Branches of the Tree. The array of the ten sephirot through which God creates and sustains all the worlds constitutes the tree of life. The first image conjured up by the word tree may be of those parts of the tree that are visible to the eye, the trunk and green foliage. But the life of the entire tree is in fact dependent on the flow of nutrients in the sap that rises up from the roots. The roots are normally invisible because they stretch deep underground. The sap and its nutrients are the shefa that flows to all parts of the tree. Only through this vitalizing flow of sap can the tree live and its branches produce their fruits. We have discussed previously the concept of shefa as a flow of beneficence flowing throughout the tree. And so now we're talking about a physical tree, but we're really talking about the tree of life, which is the images of the ten sephirot and their connecting pathways. Rabbi Ashlag is very clear that we should not limit ourselves by visualizing a diagram of the tree of life. You will find that to be very limiting as you grow in your spirituality. The tree of life consists of the ten sephirot, and there are 22 lines that connect those sephirot. Those 22 lines represent the letters. The ten sephirot are usually portrayed as a circle, but they're much more than that. And that's really part of the problem of visualizing it through the charts that are so prevalent in our world. So what this first few paragraphs is talking about is that just like in the physical tree, the sap flows up, the branch cannot do its job without being fed. And there is a direct relationship between that flow of shefa, that flow of sap, to how well the tree does its work. All the different orders of creation, all the different species, and all the individual creatures, from the souls and angels down to the animals, plants, and other beings, hang somewhere on the branches of the tree of life, namely the sephirot of creation. Each species and each individual creature manifests a different aspect of one or other of the sephirot. Let me repeat that. It's a very important paragraph. All the different orders of creation, all the different species, and all the individual creatures, from the souls and angels down to the animals, plants, and other beings, hang somewhere on the branches of the tree of life, namely the sephirot of creation. Each species and each individual creature manifests a different aspect of one or the other of the sephirot. Now, it's easy to understand that the species manifests a sephirah, but the individual bug, an individual ant that we think doesn't think, these are creatures, these are unique. That's really what the paragraph is saying, and that's why it's so important to really, truly understand what it's saying. Each species and each individual creature manifests a different aspect of the sephirah. Might be this sephirah, might be that sephirah, might be a different aspect. And within each sephirah, those different aspects are sephirot as well. The branches of the tree of life receive their vitality from its roots. These are the hidden wisdom, understanding, and knowledge that are mother to the three main columns of the tree of the Sephirot. Chesed, which is kindness, Din, which is judgment, and Rachamim, which is called here balanced mercy. Actually a better understanding, and I think you'll start to see the language start to change, because for many years, many of the Kabbalists would write in ways where they veiled certain aspects. It wasn't that they veiled it, but they would make mistakes. And no, they weren't making mistakes, they were veiling it. And what essentially it was doing is someone who's knowledgeable would know that they're describing it incorrectly, and someone who didn't know would be fooled, meaning he didn't have the merit to get it right. And so one of the things, in my opinion, the word chesed actually means loving kindness. Loving kindness, not kindness. And the word rachamim does mean mercy. Now he's saying it's balanced mercy. I'll leave that for discussion at another time. He's talking about the three columns. The columns actually have different names than the Sephirot. But the understanding is the roots feed the tree. The roots feed the Sephirot. The three upper roots, Keter, Chokhmah, and Bina, feed the seven lower roots, because the three upper roots are always in unity. They have different names. They are separate entities, but they're in unity, part of the paradox that comes from the endless world. The flow of Shefa comes from Keter, but it's manifested through Bina. It flows through Chokhmah as well. This is feeding the three columns. When we think of a tree, we may think of the roots as being below in the ground. But in the case of the tree of life, the roots of the manifest phenomena of this world actually lie on planes that are above this world. What it's really saying is we have a physical tree whose roots are concealed in the ground. Why are they in the ground? It's not because that's how the tree needs to grow. They're in the ground because the ground conceals the roots. We don't have a world that will allow the upper Sephirot to be revealed. In the spiritual world, the tree is upside down, or it's right side up, and our trees are upside down. But the basic point is, in both cases, those roots are concealed. They grow. They are placed. Their consciousness is concealment, not to be revealed. Now, with that in mind, I'll ask you the question. You're eating a French fry. Where does it come from? It comes from a root of a plant. Are you getting raw, naked energy? I'm not a botanist to go into all of the benefits of potatoes, but as has been seen through a lot of different starvation points, it has great benefit. In order for all of the branches of creation to live and flourish, they must receive vitality from the very roots of the tree of life. Each branch receives its vitality through particular channels or pathways through which the vital sap reaches it. The branches must thus be connected with the roots in order to receive their vitality. Why must the branch be connected to the root? The root can't just send the set shefa and make it appear within the branch. Why does there need to be a connection? Gotcha. The connection is that the shefa appears in the branch. Whether it's a physical, oh, I can see how it flows to it, or it just appears. Part of the intuition, part of the training in Kabbalah, part of the depth of Kabbalah is you receive answers. They're not logical. They're not based on logic. They're just right. They just appear in your mind.
Good point.
Central to all the teachings in Mishkanei Elyon is the idea that the temple is the place where all the different branches of creation reconnect with their roots through the temple service. It is through this connection and joining of the branches to their roots that Shefa spreads to all the worlds. We're going to have to talk about that later. Speaking of the point in heavenly metaspace that is the source of all the worlds, the Ramchal writes, there is a special place where all these roots come together. In that place is the root of all things. In that place are the roots of the earth and all it contains, the heavens of the heavens, and all their hosts without exception. In the place where all these roots come together, in the middle, there is a single stone. This stone is most precious. It possesses every kind of beauty and charm. It is called the Eben Shtiyah, the foundation stone. There is a corresponding stone in this world, the lower world, in the place of the Holy of Holies. The Temple Mount has the surface of the Eben Shtiyah. It is the basis of our world. That Eben Shtiyah is connected to the foundation stone in the upper worlds. Every world has a foundation stone. What the Ramchal is saying in this paragraph is that the temple service takes place on the Eben Shtiyah and reconnects all of the roots to all of the branches within the frame of reference called Eretz, our earth. Stretching out in all directions from around the stone are channels and pathways leading to all things. At their start, these channels are great highways governing and regulating all the different orders and species of created beings, all of which have a deep inner knowledge of their root paths. But from here, they all receive their share of the constant sustenance given to them by the king. Branching off from these highways are countless smaller pathways, containing the individual roots of every single being in creation, from the biggest to the smallest. Each one has its own unique pathway, Look around you. Look within you. You are connected. These pathways discussed by the Ramchal are the subject of an illuminating teaching by Rabbi Nachman of Breslov. The world has a foundation stone. Channels emanate from the stone, reaching every land. The wise King Solomon knew the details of these channels and was therefore able to plant all types of trees. If people knew the exact location of these subterranean channels, they would be able to grow fruit trees, even in lands where they do not normally grow. Each channel has the power to stimulate a particular species. Even if a certain channel does not pass through a particular land, all the channels are intertwined and flow into each other. If one knew exactly where this happens, one could plant any type of tree. If one knew the location of all the channels, one could make any type of tree grow. An obvious implication of these teachings is that the growth of actual trees and plants all over the world depends on these channels and the energy they receive from their root pathways. Since it is in the temple that all the pathways join together, the temple is, among other things, a key link in the entire global food chain. Indeed, many of the temple rituals center on produce, such as the daily wheat and oil offerings, the wine libations, the omer barley offering, and that of the first fruits. This indicates that material prosperity throughout the world actually depends on the temple. This explains why the sages of the Torah taught that since the destruction of the temple, the quality of all kinds of produce has declined. While the prophets foresaw that with its rebuilding, the world will enter a new era of prosperity and peace. As I was reading these three paragraphs, what occurred to me, it's a question I've been pondering, not constantly, but one that I've been pondering. We are in a society, we are in a time period where a lot of rumor, or not rumors, but a lot of people are fearful. And one of the things they're fearful about is the loss of the different species that appears to be going away. Species of animals are endangered, species of plants. All of this is based on looking at things from a physical perspective. And I had been pondering why those species we were losing them. Was it a lack of merit? And I'm thinking, as I was reading that all of those species are replaceable if we know how they're fed, if we know how the flow of the Shefa. And that obviously will come from the knowledge of the Mashiach. And we will be able to replace all of the species that are necessary. The next section is the sources of Shefa, the Sefirot, and the Partzufim. From where does the Shefa flowing to all levels of creation come? As stated earlier, the flow of sustenance and blessing through the Tree of Life is channeled through the Sefirot. To gain a better understanding of the Sefirot, we must start with the ultimate source of all Shefa, Hashem. We cannot know why God wanted the creation, but it is a fact that the creation exists, and it did not create itself. In the Kabbalah, as in the Torah, the power that God emanates in order to bring about and sustain creation is called light. But God is infinite, and so too is God's light. In the endless light of the infinite God, nothing else can have independent existence, since all things are there subsumed in the perfect unity of God. Can you see a candle burning in the sunlight? That's like you standing next to God. You can't be seen, but you're there. To make it possible for a separate creation to come into being in order to fulfill God's purpose, Kabbalah teaches that the infinite light was contracted or dimmed. This enabled different grades, aspects, and colors inherent in the light to be revealed, leading eventually to the creation of the finite material realm that is the stage where we play out our lives in this world. We can understand all of this on a simple level. This is talking about creation and the process, which we, the Kabbalists, call evolution, different than the evolution of the evolutionists. But we can know the thought of God. The Ari teaches us that the thought of God is to reveal himself. The thought of God is to have a kingdom to be a king for. The thought of God is to share goodness. These are all aspects, and there are many more within the thoughts of God, or the thought of God, because thought, God thinks in one level, which is many. We think in many levels, which are, we strive to be one. Much of the Kabbalah is concerned with explaining what happens as the infinite light is successfully muted so as to shine in a measured way, thereby creating worlds that can receive the divine light without being obliterated. The Etz Chaim of the Ari gives a complete history of creation, beginning with the first Tzimtzum, the contraction of the infinite light. This produced Chalal Panui, the vacant space, that made it possible for separate, finite worlds to exist. Within the limits of this work, it is impossible to do more than list some of the chief stages in the Kabbalistic history of creation. After the contraction of the infinite light, a single line of divine light entered the vacated space and spread in the form of Adam Kadmon, primordial man. The divine light shone in 10 successive radiations, but the vessels were as yet unable to receive the intense light of the 10 archetypical sephirot, and as a result, the vessels broke. What people should really understand is that that initial structure of the Sephirot, planned by God as a purposeful method of allowing us to assist in the creation, that purposeful process where the vessels broke came about because the Sephirot could not communicate with each other. They were totally independent, totally ego-driven. And this caused them to break. They could not handle the light. And they couldn't say to the other Sephirot, "Don't give it to me." There was no way to communicate. And the concept of breaking is not a physical breaking. and the concept of sparks that we will speak about from time to time is also not anything physical. This is part of the reason we try not to understand this from the perspective of a diagram. The story of the breaking and subsequent repair of the vessels intended to reveal the light of the Sephiroth to God's creatures is central to the Kabbalistic answer to the problem of evil. The breaking of the vessels brings into being a realm where godliness becomes so hidden that evil may appear to be as strong and desirable as good. This sets the stage for the unfolding drama of God's choicest creature, Adam, man who is given the task of completing the process of tikkun, the repair or rectification of the sephirotic vessels. This he does by searching for, uncovering, and embracing the true good that is itself the reward for his efforts in this world of good and evil. The world attains a state of repair when the intended receivers of the good that God desires to give are properly aligned to receive it. The light must be suited to the vessels and the vessels to the light. In this way, God's light can be perfectly revealed in a graded, balanced way on all levels. When the ten sephirot shine in their rectified state, it is in a mode of alignment, balance, and cooperative interaction between giver and receiver. When the sephirot manifest in this rectified state, it is in the form of various levels of partsufim. Another way of saying that the sephirot are able to communicate with each other. A partsuf is a person's face or appearance with his or her distinctive features. Head, body, arms, and legs. The human form reflects that the tree of life, which is one of perfect balance. In the human body, the right and left sides meet and are balanced in the center column. The human form thus expresses the alignment and balance of right and left, giver and receiver. Another expression of this alignment and balance is when male and female interact and join together in mutual cooperation, stimulation, giving and receiving. In the terminology of the Kabbalah, this mutual interaction takes the form of chibur, connecting, and zivug, pairing and mating. All these concepts of giver-receiver, right-left, male-female, mutual interaction, cooperation, and stimulation are aspects of the array of partsufim through which the ten sephirot function in different ways on different levels to bring creation to its ultimate purpose. All the parts of theme have the same essential structure of head, body, arms, and legs. But the nature and function of each individual partsuf depends on its level. Similarly, all people have the same fundamental bodily structure, but different individuals appear and function in very different ways, because they are invested with different features and powers. In the garb of the various partsufim, the sephirot can send appropriate shefa to the different levels of creation. The main partsufim of which the Kabbalah speaks are starting from the top, Atik, the ancient one, Arikanpin, the long face, Abba, father, Ima, mother, Zeranpin, the small face, Nukva, the female, the daughter. The central focus in much of the Kabbalah is on the partsufim of Zeranpin and Nukva and their interrelationships. This is because it is primarily through these two parts of Fim that the world in which we live is governed. In Mishkan Elyon, the Mikveh is usually referred to as the Shekhinah, the indwelling presence, or Malchut, kingly power, and sometimes simply as She. Zeron Pin is referred to as Melech, the king. It is through cooperative interaction between the Parksufim, and especially between Zeron Pin and Nukvah, that the Shefa of sustenance and blessing flows into the world. We have already done the next section, which is lights, names, and numbers. And we are at the point called the letters of creation. I didn't comment on the last few sections because it's really just listing different aspects of Kabbalah, and it takes too much explanation to really give clear understanding of those words. A letter is an oath, a sign. When we write for everyday purposes, the letters on the page are signs, indicating the successive sounds making up the words with which we communicate our meaning. But when a chemist writes the letters of a chemical formula, what is important is not the pronunciation of the letters, but rather how they are used to signify different elements and compounds. Everyone knows that the lines and shapes making up the letters and numbers in chemical formula are not the elements or compounds themselves. They are signs that point to certain aspects of physical matter, helping us understand and sometimes manipulate them. They are metaphors. The letters are metaphor for different aspects of creation. The letters of the Aleph Bet are, of course, used in simple written communication to signify how to pronounce and read the words of some message. But as written in the Torah, the letters of the Aleph Bet are not merely signs as to how to read the scriptures in order to derive practical lessons to apply in our lives. While the Torah is certainly a communication to humanity on our level, it is at the same time a revelation of godly power that goes far beyond us. The Torah is made up of words that read as a message teaching us wisdom, understanding, and a path in life. At the same time, these words are divine names that are the power formula of all elemental powers that create and sustain the universe. I'm sorry, I skipped a line. That are the power formula of all creation. The ink letters written on the parchment in our Torah scrolls are signs expressing and helping us to understand, relate to, and even manipulate the elemental powers that create and sustain the universe. That should be read again as well, but I won't. But what is the purpose of any form of manipulation? Do I need to understand in order to manipulate? Does a child understand the tinker toys that he puts together into the various shapes? Or does he just manipulate? This is why the Kabbalah had to be concealed for so many thousands of years, because we, as children, could manipulate without understanding. As we said at Mount Sinai, we will do, and then we will know. Potentially, doing without knowing creates destruction, God forbid. The letters of creation. I'm sorry, I missed a paragraph. Interesting. These elemental powers of creation are the letters of creation, the 22 letters of the alphabet, as explained by Abraham in the Sefer Yetzirah. Each of the 22 letters of creation is a precise degree, level, or kind of godly power or light, capable of combining and interacting with all of the other elemental powers so as to produce infinite numbers of different formula, giving rise to all the different phenomena of creation on all levels. Since all these powers are different levels, degrees, or measures of godly light, it is understandable by why each of the letters of the alphabet has its own distinct numerical value or gematria. You're all familiar with the movie The Matrix. In that movie, they presented you with scenes where the walls were made up of digital letters moving up and down in rows and so forth. And the walls moving up and down in the letter forms, in the digital form, were what people saw as something real. So what is the illusion? The letters moving up and down, or the wall? Both are potentially illusionary. Both are potentially real. The letters of creation are themselves the vessels of which the Kabbalah speaks, through which the light and power of the Sefirot are revealed. The Hebrew word for vessel, kli, has a connotation of measure. A cup holding a given measure of liquid is one kind of vessel. A given combination of letters is also a vessel that holds and channels a given measure of power. By themselves, the individual letters are broken vessels that can accomplish very little. But when these elemental powers of creation combine and interact in highly specific configurations of formula, they have the power to serve as instruments of godly creation and blessing. How do the letters combine and interact? Sound. Writing is less sound creates. The next section, divine names. The different combinations of letters and making up the words of the Torah are all names. The Kabbalah sees the entire Torah as a fabric of mathematically and semantically interconnected names and names of names, woven around certain underlying generic names of God. The different names signify different divine powers and attributes, Sefirot and Partsufim, that actually exert their influence through the names themselves. It is through these names that the lights, the Sefirot and Partsufim, send Shefa into creation. The flow is through the channels of the letters in the form of names. The principal divine names explicitly revealed in the Torah are the Tetragrammaton, Yah, Yud-Keh, Echiyeh, Aleph-Keh, Yud-Keh, Kel, Elohim, Adonai Tzavaot, and Elohim Tzavaot. This is God of hosts. Shaddai and Adonai. Again, these are just listing. it would take much too much to describe or discuss. The next section is called Miluim. Besides these names, many others are embedded in the biblical text in hidden ciphers or alluded to in other ways, including your name. A highly significant category of names in Mishkaneh Elyon and Kabbalah generally is that of Miluim, literally the fillings. Each of the letters of the alphabet not only has its simple form, the individual letter, as it appears when written in a word. Each letter also has its name made up of itself, and one or two other specific letters with which it combines to form the unique power configuration that is the essence of the letter in question. For example, the letter Yud is represented in the Torah scroll as a simple dot. Yet the full name of the letter is spelled out with the letters Yud, Vav, Dalet. The filling letters, in this case the Vav and Dalet, are an integral part of the formula that gives the letter its power. When the full name of each of the constituent letters of a divine name is written out, this is called a milui, a filling or expansion of the name. For example, the simple letters of the divine name El are Aleph and Lamed, having the combined numerical value of 31. Spelling out in full the names of the letters, Aleph and Lamed, gives us the Milui of El, Aleph Lamed, Aleph Lamed Pei, 111, plus Lamed Mem, Dalet, 74. Total is 185. The potential in the simple letters that were previously hidden gives the Milui expanded power as reflected in its total numerical value. This power was present in potential in the simple letters of the name, since the hidden letters making up the full names of the simple letters are integral parts of these letters. When the simple letters are filled with their constituent letters in the Milui, the potential power is actually manifested. Because of the great power of He and Vav, two of the letters of the essential name, they are capable of being filled with different letters. Thus, the He can be spelled in full either as He, Yud, He Aleph, or He He, while the Vav can be spelled either as Vav Vav, Vav Yud Vav, Vav Aleph Vav, or Vav Vav. This means the name containing the letters He and Vav, such as the Tetragrammaton and that of Echiyeh, can be expanded in various ways. Each of the different expansions is bound up with a particular sephirah, or partsuf, or aspect thereof. The four main expansions of the essential name of the Tetragrammaton are Ayin Bet, the name of the expansion of 72, Samach Gimel, the expansion of 63, Mem He, the expansion of 45, and Bet Nun, the expansion of 52. The next section is called Union. The ultimate goal of creation is the complete revelation of God on all levels. In this rectified state, giver and receiver are perfectly aligned. The movement of creation towards this rectified state is characterized by various kinds of joining and pairing of the various parts of Him, some of which are more involved in giving while others are more associated with receiving. The supreme example of creative interaction, giving and receiving, is when man and wife align and join together in holy union, yichud, to parent a child who will unite in one being essential qualities of both. They accomplished this through Chibur, joining together, and Zivug, cooperative interaction. In a person's inner spiritual life, the giver is God, and the person or soul, the receiver, is the wife, while the children are the person's spiritual achievements and good deeds. Yehud, holy union, comes about when the receiver joins him or herself to God. One makes oneself the vessel for godly light by binding all one's limbs and faculties to his service and filling one's might and soul with the words of prayer coming from one's mouth into one's ears. When a person makes him or herself a vessel for godly light, on the vessel of thought, word, and action, the Shekhinah, the indwelling presence, is aligned to receive from Melech, the king. When this unification of Yehud comes about, the receiving partsuf of Nukva, the female, is aligned to receive from Zeronpin, the male. On the level of the names of the two partsufim involved, this union is expressed through the joining of the two divine names, Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei and Aleph-Dalet-Nun-Yud, to form new power combinations. One of the better known examples of how these two names may be joined together is through Shiluv, interweaving the letters of the two names, as in Yud-Aleph-Hei, Dalet Vav Nun He Yud, or prayers, thereby unifying the giver, the Holy One, blessed be He, and the receiver, the Shekhinah. The next section, titled Number and Space. It is the Yehud, or union of different parts of theme through the joining and connection of their associated names, that makes the heavenly temple. This will be more understandable if we grasp a very simple point that is the key to the mathematics of Mishkanei Elyon. These involve little more than simple addition and multiplication. I haven't been making comments because these concepts are so deep that to explain them or comment on them is just time-wise, we would not have the time. And we're trying to get to the actual book itself. But we do need to have this background and definitions in order to make headway when we do get into the book. The mathematical system of Mishkanei Elyon is what in Hebrew is known as Gematria, the study of numbers. The term Gematria is derived from the ancient Greek word for what we call geometry. It is common knowledge that Gematria is the study of the numerical values of the letters and words of the Hebrew Torah. What is not generally realized is that Gematria, like geometry, is also the mathematics of space. This is alluded to in the Sefer Yetzirah, which says that two stones build two houses, three stones build six houses, four stones build 24 houses. The stones are the letters of the Aleph-Bet, the building blocks of creation. The concept of stones or blocks is intrinsically three-dimensional, in which, Rabbi Kaplan commentary. Geometry, the mathematics of space, was initially a practical science employed by ancient architects as they sought to build more ambitious projects. Ramchal in Mishkanei Elyon brings Kabbalistic gematria to the level of sacred architectural geometry, as he explains how interactions between the divine names of the Partsufim, all of which are also numbers, create the space of the Holy Temple. Consider an example of how numbers create space. A room that is 40 feet in length, 20 feet wide, and 20 feet high is created by walls of appropriate length and height. In the language of Mishkanei Elyon, the floor space of such a room is created through the joining, the Tzibur, of 40 and 20. Tzibur is the Hebrew word for the mathematical relationship expressed by X, the multiplication sign. We would say that the room is 40 by 20 and 20 high, or 40 by 20 by 20. The mathematics of Mishkanei Elyon are no more complicated than that. As the Ramchal proceeds with his tour of the various areas of the temple, he shows how each individual hall, chamber, wall, gate, and courtyard appears. As a result of the joining together of some or all of the letters of various divine names, these names correspond to the Sefirot and the Partsufim, which are the Midot, the qualities or measures. Tibur, the joining and multiplication of the measures, brings into being three-dimensional spaces where the axes of length, breadth, and height are the three lines or columns of Chesed, Din, and Rachamim, mercy and balance. The temple that Ramchal explains to us in Mishkanei Elyon is that seen by Ezekiel in his prophetic vision. The angel appeared to the prophet with his measuring rod and linen cord, taking him on what today would be called a virtual three-dimensional tour of the entire temple, showing him every detail and giving him exact measurements. These measurements are the Midot, the Sefirot and Partsufim, and the interactions and joining create space. The temple that Ezekiel saw exists in metaspace, or in the language of religion and Kabbalah, space as it is above in heaven. Yet the Sefirot and the Partsufim hold sway on all levels of creation, spiritual and physical. Numerical relationships between the various names are capable of being expressed in the form of the finite physical three-dimensional halls, chambers, gates, and courtyards of the temple in this world. The heavenly temple is thus a hologram that exists on a level beyond space, as we know it, in heaven. And as such, it is the very blueprint of creation. Yet this same hologram is destined to actually manifest in physical space in the form of the third temple on earth. This will be the tangible embodiment of the holographic pattern. There's a lot said in that paragraph, but I don't really have the time to comment. The key principle governing all the relationships expressed in the holographic temple is balance between the two sides, the right side of Chesed and expansiveness, and the left side of Din, judgment and contraction. Chesed and Din, right and left, are the giver and receiver, male and female, of the Kabbalah equation. Balancing these two sides is the center column of Rachamim, mercy and compassion. For the goal of creation is that God, master of compassion, should be perfectly revealed on all levels so as to give all creatures their own unique share of pure goodness. This giving requires a state of perfect balance between giver and receiver on all levels. This balance is expressed in the form of the halls and courtyards of the temple, which is located in the place where all the roots of creation join together. The temple and its services are ordered in such a way that giver and receiver join face to face. This way, all the branches, the souls, the angels, and other orders and levels of created beings reconnect with their roots and receive their respective shares of sustaining Shefa from the Creator. Did you understand this? The goal of creation is that everything should be perfectly revealed on all sides. In order to give all creatures their own unique share of pure goodness. The last section, called order. The key to this rectified state of creation is Seder, order. The temple buildings and courtyards are ordered in space to provide a properly balanced environment for the interaction between giver and receiver. Within this space, the various daily, weekly, monthly, and festival services can constitute an order in time through which this interaction is continually maintained. The Ramchal explains the inner meaning of the temple services and their role in bringing Shefa to the souls on their level and to the angels on theirs. All the different ranks and orders have their own designated areas and levels on the Temple Mount and are able to ascend to higher levels at specified times in order to receive their portion of Shefa from the table of the king. The angels ascend through the sacrificial offerings and on the outer altar, while the souls ascend through the incense offering on the inner altar. The Ramchal concludes his explanation of temple buildings and services with a discussion of the various levels of the Temple Mount and the steps that connect them. This links in with the discussion of Shefa, for it is on these steps that the various orders of creation go up to actually receive their share of Shefa. As the angels in the heavenly temple ascend to receive the Shefa, they chant, "Holy, holy, holy is the God of hosts, and blessed be the glory of God from his place." These verses are recited daily at high points in the Jewish prayer services. The Ramchal's explanation of the ascent of the angels provides important keys to deeper understanding of the prayer services and how they channel Shefa to all the worlds. For the set daily prayers correspond to the temple services, and the orders of Seder that governs them is embedded in the order of prayers, or Siddur, the traditional Jewish prayer book. Starting tonight at 10 p.m. No, not tonight. I'm sorry. Starting tomorrow again at 5 and tomorrow night at 10 p.m., we will begin the study of the book itself, The Secret of the Third Temple. Does anybody have any questions? I invite you to the beginning of the Sefer Yetzirah class at 7 p.m. West Coast time. And I also invite you to a special connection Thursday night at 10 p.m. for Joseph HaSadiq to utilize the power of the Sadiq in order to assist us in our lives today, and also a special connection to Rashi, the main commentator on the Torah, Saturday evening at 10 p.m. I wish you all well. Have a beautiful evening.
Thanks, Anoik.